This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Kluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friend Barnabas Piper. And Pipe, we have a special episode on tap because this is the first ever Happy Rant Sports app that is sponsored. So this thing has grown so fast. So thank you to you listeners and those of you who reach out on social media and say that you like Happy Rant Sports and want more of Happy Rant Sports. But I am just about as stoked as I could be for any sponsor, Pipe, because I don't know if you knew this about me, but one of my super nerdy, enduring sports loves is for defunct pro football leagues. So like the World Football League, the USFL, the World League of American Football. And I was browsing around online one day. I ran across a company called 503 Sports. And 503 Sports specializes in apparel for all these football throwback leagues. So all these leagues that that are defunct, that that came and went, but that some of us are huge fans of. They do jerseys, they do caps, hoodies, t-shirts, and I reached out to 503, and they were kind enough to send us a bunch of their swag in exchange for some sponsorships. So if you go to 503-sports.com, you can see their whole line. They have great stuff. I've gotten some of the gear in. Some of it arrived yesterday. I got a hat and a long sleeve t-shirt, and it's high quality stuff, great gear. Again, the website is 503-sports.com.
So I was pretty pumped when my Memphis Showboats t-shirt showed up in the mail yesterday. And then I got my World Football League t-shirt, too. So it's just like the league logo. And then I still got a couple things on the way, too.
Yeah, I got a Chicago Blitz long sleeve t-shirt from the USFL. I went all USFL with my stuff. So I got a Blitz t-shirt. I got an LA Express hat, which that team will come up later in our next segment. And then I actually got an LA Express jersey too, which I haven't received yet, but it's going to be sewn. It's going to have my name and number on it. I'm super, super pumped.
What is your number?
My number. So I've had a few, but 43 is kind of our family number. So, Tristan actually wore it in Pee Wee, years ago when I coached him. So then when I played in France, I wore it, kind of as an homage to him. And we've both been kind of wearing it ever since. So, Very cool. So that's it. That's our family number. And, I've got an LA Express jersey coming from 503-sports.com. So everybody check it out, buy some gear. They are great people. They've been very cool to work with, and, we're super grateful to have them on board sponsoring this app. So Piper, in honor of 503 Sports and in honor of our friends at 503 Sports, I thought it would be fun if we did an all-time uniform draft. So every sport is up for grabs, college, professional, all-time great uniforms. Who goes on the clock first, Pipe? Would you like to be on the clock first?
No, I think you can go first. I have a feeling we're going to go decidedly different directions in this, so I'm not worried about you taking my top overall picks.
Yeah, I'm going with the sleeper at number one overall. I can tell you that. So it's going to be a sleeper.
More sleeper than Baker Mayfield?
More sleeper than Baker Mayfield. This one's probably not even on your draft board, although it might be. It might be. I don't know. I don't know how deeply your, like, you know, second-rate football league proclivities go. But I'm on the clock, so I will be on the clock first. And my selection, I'm just filling out the card and handing it to the commissioner now. My number one overall pick in the all-time throwback uniform draft is the World League of American Football London Monarchs. Do you remember this team, Piper, or this league? Do you have any recollection of the league?
My introduction to this league was through Brad Johnson, the former quarterback for multiple NFL teams, but one of them was the Vikings. And so he was the backup for the Vikings, then became the starter. And he actually played for, I think it might have been London. If not them, it was Amsterdam.
Interesting.
And so I didn't know there was a league until I was looking at, so I was probably 10 years old and looking at his football card and saw that he had played in some Euro football league. And I was like, they have football in Europe?
You know, my mind was blown. So Yeah, so spring, starting like my freshman year in high school, so this would have been like 90, 91, there was a new league called the World League of American Football, and they had teams in random places. So like San Antonio had a team, London, Barcelona, Frankfurt, New York, Sacramento. So there was this weird smattering of teams. Birmingham had one. And the London Monarchs uniform, it was like a nice royal blue with a gold pant with like subtle red accents, gold
helmet.
That's
a rare combo. Usually if there's gold involved, there's only like that gold. It's gold and one other color.
Dude, right. There was a third color, just a little subtle pop of red. It was so fresh and clean, man. Great, great uniform. London Monarchs. So this was this league ran from like 90 to 93 in the iteration that I liked. And then it came back, kind of rebranded as NFL Europe, and the uniforms got really funky. They tried to make them, you know, look more like soccer uniforms and stuff with ads all over them. But yeah, the real iteration. And it was the first, I think we talked about this before, it was the first time Riddell had rolled out their like plastic face mask. You remember those thick, chunky, like everybody in the World League had one of those, and they kind of looked hideous, but now like I'm nostalgic for them. So London Monarchs, World League of American Football is my number one overall pick. Piper, you are on the clock.
I have a distinct feeling that throughout the course of this episode, I'm going to go, oh, right, that is a great pick every time.
Dude,
you
me
say
too.
Something.
Me too.
Because
no,
there's so many amazing uniforms through the ages. I will say, though, it is not a strong period of time for uniforms right now.
I totally agree. Agree.
Literally nothing that exists right now makes me stand up and go, wow, with the exception of really classic uniforms like Penn State or Alabama or some of those.
Sure, but, sure.
All right, so I'm going to cheat because if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And I'm going to go 1980s baby blue baseball uniforms.
Dude, that's on my list. That's literally like third or fourth round for me, but I love it.
I can't pick one because the Twins had one, the Cardinals had one, the Phillies had one, the Braves had one. Like any team
Braves,
that had blue in their uniform had a baby blue uniform.
Dude, and the Royals, the Expos, I mean, it was a great, great time for them.
The Royals are a classic, And so, so they were all sort of one uniform.
They were. And mine is on the list in the exact same way. 80s powder blue baseball unis, man. So good.
So that is my number one overall pick because when I look around Major League Baseball now, like thankfully Major League Baseball for the most part doesn't botch their uniforms. They're just boring.
Yeah. Dude, they are.
And then you get teams like Arizona who changes their uniform every 2 years and they perpetually look horrific. And Miami, who used to be Florida, who nobody cares about. But these were time stamped as all time classic uniforms, and so many great players who wore them too. The other thing is they were always like they went with stirrups most of the time.
Oh, dude, so good!
And they were back when the uniforms were like they were like tight polyester instead of sort of pajama pantsish, and so you'd have like Bo Jackson in his Royals uniform looked like an Adonis.
But he looked like a superhero. He looked like somebody drew him.
But then you had like little twiggy guys and fat guys and like
fat guys.
It was
absolutely
delightful. Like I remember seeing John Kruk play in a throwback Phillies uniform like this, and I'm like, you know what? That's just about perfect. You got mullet, facial hair, beer belly, everything.
Yeah, exactly. That was back in the era where like baseball players didn't work out.
Yes.
Like they're afraid to work out for fear that like getting bulked up would like ruin your swing or your throwing motion or whatever. So like, you literally were just what you were. So you had like a bunch of skinny relief pitchers with like pot bellies. You had Kruk. You had, you know, gifted guys like Bo Jackson who just like got out of bed in the morning and looked, you know, completely yoked up. But that was an amazing era, Pipe. That's a good, solid choice. So my second round selection, I am back on the clock. I have a feeling you're going to like this one, but I'm not sure. My next selection is the 70s to early 90s vintage orange creamsicle Tampa Bay Bucks uniform.
So much better than their pewter and blood stain or whatever. Pewter and tomato sauce.
The pewter and blood stain era, like the Mike. It makes me sad that Mike Allstott had to wear that uniform because I basically semi worship Mike Allstott. But the pewter and blood stain was one era. But the thing they got now is just a circus. I mean, that's just
that's true.
Put a big top over it, man. That's a circus.
Yeah, very XFL.
Oh, it's terrible. It's so terrible on so many levels, and it used to be so good. So we're talking about a white pant, a clean white pant, with the orange stripes down the side, the orange creamsicle jersey, the white helmet with Bucko Bruce, and the orange face mask, man. James Wilder wore the heck out of it, looked phenomenal in that uniform. Leroy Selman. I'm racking my brain to think of stars because there weren't many stars on those teams.
They were all-time bad teams. I mean, that was part of the thing is, like, Dungy came in as coach, and they changed the uniform right about then, and it was like, just we're pretending that era never happened. We're starting over, and then there was Warwick Dunn and Mike Allstott, and you know,
right? Great teams. Derek Brooks, Warren
Derek
Sapp,
Brooks, Warren Sapp, John Lynch, Rondé Barber. So with that came an exceptionally cool period of time for them, but the early uniforms were better.
Dude, absolutely they were, and I always loved watching them play. One of my favorite, like, low-key players from the 80s was on those Buck teams. Steve DeBerg. Do you remember Steve DeBerg?
He was a quarterback, right?
He was a backup quarterback. He played till he was, like, 50 years old. Yeah. He always looked really, like, he looked like a golf pro. You know what I mean? He had a perpetual, like, brown tan and wavy hair. And Steve DeBerg was a great play-action passer, man. That was kind of his thing, but he was always on crappy teams. So so shout-out, DeBerg family, if you're listening. I know you're ardent Happy Rant Sports supporters. We are fans of yours, and we're fans of that uniform. So, Piper, round two, you are on the clock. What are we looking at?
At the risk of sounding non-patriotic, red, white, and blue normally don't make for great uniforms. It's kind of lame.
Yeah,
unless there is a Minuteman snapping a football on your helmet.
Oh.
And so I'm probably robbing another one of your picks here, but I'm going to go with that 80s and then I think into the early 90s New England Patriots uniform with the mascot snapping the football on the white helmet, and then the rest of it was, you know, it was just like, it was very patriotic. They looked like a Boy Scout troop ready to go march on the 4th of July parade.
Dude, it was the most incredible thing, and it went so well with, like, you look at old pictures of that era, and they've got that, like, cheesy cut rate stadium that they played in. They've got the bad old AstroTurf, but it's just perfect. Like, it works perfectly.
It went perfectly with AstroTurf. Similarly to Powder Blue Baseball, also going with AstroTurf and multi-purpose stadiums. But
the whole look, the multi-purpose stadiums, that's such a good point, man. I'm so glad you brought that up.
The worst stadiums. I went to multiple ones over the years to watch.
Oh, they were terrible.
Baseball, and they were like the spork of stadiums. They did nothing well. They were pretty useless.
Exactly.
They were round and bowl-shaped. And
if you were in the upper
terrible.
Deck, you were like a mile away from the action, mile and a half away from whatever action it was, whether it was football or baseball.
You couldn't really tell anyway once you were in the upper deck. So, I mean, you might have been watching a soccer game and wouldn't even know.
Dude, the AstroTurf looked magnificent, though. It really did. And it was kind of like, in those multi-use stadiums, you could see where they, like, zippered certain parts of it in and out, and it was just kind of fascinating.
There was, like, slightly off shades of green where they had, like, newer AstroTurf that was a little bit more brilliant, reflected light a little bit more.
Yeah. Dude, so those Patriot teams had they had one of my other favorite 80s quarterbacks, and I love this guy because he wore a neck roll. It was Steve Grogan. Do you remember Steve Grogan? Have we mentioned him on the program before? I feel like maybe when we talked about neck rolls.
Because of your abiding passion for neck rolls. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so Grogan wore number 14 for the Pats. He was kind of tall, lanky quarterback, sneaky athletic, sneaky good runner. I think two distinctives about Grogan. One is the neck roll, but the other one was, I think he played actually with, like, dip in his mouth. So, you know a guy's tough if he's running around getting sacked and playing with dip. So, Piper, that was actually my third round selection. So my war room is going crazy right now. So we're rearranging things on our draft board, and we have a pick ready to make, ready to go to the commissioner for round three. And this one actually kind of dovetails nicely with the multi-use stadium thing. So, my dad was a pilot. And he would go on these long trips when I was a kid, and sometimes he would bring me back swag from whatever team, whatever metro area he was in. And I remember one time he had a trip to Toronto, up in Canada, and he brought me back some Toronto Argos gear. And this would have been right after they signed Rocket Ismail away from the NFL. So I don't know if you remember that, but Wayne Gretzky and John Candy, were part owners of the Toronto Argos in the early 90s.
Yep.
And they made this huge like financial push to lure Rocket Ismail away from the NFL and up to Toronto. And that was a dope uniform, man. So that uniform, again, very simple blue jersey, very tasteful blue helmet with a white face mask with just an A, like a block A on the helmet. They had the white pant, but the pant had like contrasting color blue stripes, just a thicker dark shade of blue with a lighter shade of blue next to it. Another great AstroTurf uniform, man. And they played in the Sky Dome. So the Sky Dome was the first retractable roof stadium. It looked very futuristic in the 90s and probably a terrible place to watch a football game, but it looked really cool to me. So
it's not a terrible place to watch a baseball game.
No, I watched a baseball game there.
And
it was nice.
I mean, I sat upper deck right field, so right under the CN Tower, you know, the big tall Space Needle-looking thing. And it's really not a bad place to watch a game.
Yeah. No, I agree. Dude, Toronto's such a dope city, man. I hope we can get up there for a live in Louisville up in Toronto.
Live in the sneaky, most cosmopolitan city in North America.
Exactly. So Toronto fan base, Toronto listeners, do the best you can to book a big swanky venue and get us up there. So, Piper, you are on the clock. What else do you have?
I am on the clock, and there's a running theme in my picks, and that is that the 80s ruled uniforms.
I totally agree.
The 80s were bad for a lot of things, but power ballads and power sports uniforms are not those things. So I'm going to go with the 1980s Denver Nuggets uniforms.
Ooh. Now, jog my memory. That one had multiple colors.
It did. It was like a royal blue with like rainbow stripes.
And a little jagged like skyline in the back, right?
Well, I think the skyline was the new version. There was like a mountain outline.
They
did a newer version of it that I think had a skyline on it, which also looks really cool. But yeah, I mean, but it was like genuinely a, you know, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, rainbow stripes. And then, but then the kicker is the gold trim around the neck and the sleeve holes. So
that's
it just
right.
gives it that little extra pop. And then the numbers on the front are off center, like upper left chest.
That was another 80s thing. The off center, like upper left chest number on the front of the jersey. I dug that.
See, but this one had such a prominent logo across the front that they had to do the off center number. And it worked really, really well. They are the best basketball uniforms in NBA history.
Dude, who is the best player to wear that uniform? Are we talking Alex English?
That's the name that comes to mind. I think Kiki Vandeweghe on those teams?
I think Kiki Vandeweghe was on those teams.
Those were the teams that were like no defense, all offense, pushing up and on the court. I mean, Alex English is probably the best player in franchise history, you know, up until maybe Carmelo. I think he was probably the best player who wore those.
Dude, remember from that same era, the Sacramento Kings had a powder blue, and they had...
They've actually brought that back.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing as a kid, though, because I remember they had the players' numbers along the bottom of the jersey on the back. So they would have the number, and then the player's name, the name, was beneath the numbers.
Yeah, very Euro, it was a very Euro League thing. I was watching some highlights of an NBA draft guy, Luka Doncic, who's supposed to be, you know, top two or three pick this year. And I didn't know who it was. I just sort of caught it on the TV, and I kept looking for his name. And every time I would look at the wrong place on his jersey, you know, while he's running back up court, and so I'd miss it because it was below the number. It's very, very Euro League thing.
And the 80s Sacramento Kings played like a cut-rate Euro League team. So in that respect, it was
cohesive.
The 90s
Sacramento Kings, and then early 2000s Sacramento Kings were okay, and then they went back to cut-rate.
Dude, the white chocolate years were the pinnacle of being a Sacramento Kings fan, I think. But
well, then you had the Vlade and Peja and Chris Webber years.
Oh, that's right.
They were pretty competitive, and then they got hosed by the refs and the Lakers.
That's right. Dude, I'm glad you went to 80s NBA because that was my next one. I'm gonna stay in that era, stay in that league. My next one is the Wayman Tisdale era Indiana Pacers. Do you remember this uni?
Man,
it was like semi. Yeah, so red and blue, obviously, with like a white accent, but it was big chunks of red and blue kind of going on a diagonal pattern.
It's the best Pacer uniform.
No, not red and blue. Blue and yellow, sorry.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, man, I didn't know they used to have red in their uniforms. Oh, yeah, like the diagonal, like,
yeah,
racing stripe looking.
The diagonal racing stripe, it said Pacers and big kind of chunky, you know, curvy letters across the front. And such a fresh uniform, man. They used to play in Market Square Arena. And we would go because they never sold out and tickets were cheap. And we would watch. Wayman Tisdale is my favorite player because he was a saxophone player. And my parents made me be in the band, so I was also a saxophone player in honor of Wayman Tisdale. So Wayman Tisdale, the Duncan Dutchman, Rick Smith, Steve Stepanovich. They had some classic crappy white guys on those teams. Greg Dreiling, you know, some real legendary bad white guys.
Yeah, but, man, it's amazing. When you think about 80s basketball, everybody's mm-hmm. like, you know, Lakers, Celtics, Rockets,
yeah,
you know, Sixers. What you failed to remember is that everybody else in the league sucked.
Yeah, that's it, man. There was such the,
there
like,
was no middle class.
There was no middle class. It was all the haves and have-nots. And if you were in a have-not market, like, you were just happy to go to the game. You were happy to see whatever other team was in town. And that was the best you could do, you know? I remember, like, in that era watching the Pacers play, like, the cheapest ticket was always, like, Pacers, New Jersey Nets, you know? And there would be nobody in the arena, but the Nets had a dope uniform too. I've actually liked every New Jersey Nets uniform iteration, I think, probably since the beginning of time.
They've had some great. The Jason Kidd era Nets had some, they were just sort of generic, but the new.
They were generic, yeah.
The Brooklyn Nets black and white uniforms might be the best in the NBA right now.
Dude, those are so dope. Even like the. Yeah, like the Derek Coleman era Net uni was kind of a mess, but kind of in a good way. It's just a pleasing color scheme. Like the dark blue red kind of semi gray motif that they had going was just nice to look at. So yeah, Piper, you are on the clock. Who's next for you?
I think I'm going to go super classic here. So like a team that doesn't exist anymore.
Ooh, I like it. That's real classic.
And it is the Brooklyn Dodgers uniform. Because there is no blue as bright as Dodger blue, and there's no white as bright as the white of the home uniform for the Dodgers. However, the B on the hat looks way better than the LA on the hat of the current Dodgers.
I'm with you, man.
And
I'm
so the and then just Brooklyn across the chest. So the Brooklyn Dodgers uniform is my all-time favorite baseball uniform. It's not as fun as some of the others, but like just as a staple.
Absolutely.
It's the coolest.
Dude, it's the coolest, and it's going to be the most pleasant to look at the most often. And don't you think that, like, the backdrop of a real city made that uniform even better? Like, I think context is everything with a lot of these uniforms.
Oh, yes.
And, like, the orange creamsicle Bucks uni, like, it just looked good in the sun. You know what I mean? It was always sunny. The seats were always half empty at the Sombrero.
Yeah, that never would have worked at, like, the Meadowlands.
Dude, no, it would have been terrible at the Meadowlands. And in fact, when they played in the Meadowlands, it looked out of place, you know. But yeah, the Brooklyn Dodgers in Brooklyn with the city as a backdrop, I think is just
same
perfect.
With like the Miami Dolphins. Like that is the ugly, like, you know, when they roll into a stadium with snow, they're going to get slaughtered. But when it's 85 degrees and sunny in South Florida, that weird sort of aqua and orange mix,
right?
It kind of works.
Dude, it absolutely works. It just makes sense, you know. It just makes sense. Piper, I'm going to go to the ice now. Since we're in the NHL playoffs, my team is back on the clock, and I'm going classic too. I'm going with a team that's never, ever changed its uniform aesthetic. It's got a great color scheme, great core colors, great accent color, and a great logo. I'm going Chicago Blackhawks. This one looked the best when they were at the old Chicago Stadium. So the old Chicago Stadium with the organ, where the old Bulls used to play as well. This is a great-looking uni, man. Red, black, a little bit of white for an accent. Looks good at home, looks good on the road. Every iteration of this uniform is a killer. So I'm going Chicago Blackhawks.
That's a great pick. So when I was a kid, didn't pay any attention to hockey at all.
Yeah.
Here's how you know a uniform is spectacular. When a child who cares nothing about the sport or the city looks at a shirt and says, I want that shirt.
I want that. That looks cool.
Because at like 8 years old, I had a Chicago Blackhawks shirt simply because it was the coolest looking shirt. It was so tough looking.
Oh, absolutely. Very tough looking, man. Very, very tough looking. Even if the team stinks, even if the team's going through a down time, it's still a great looking uniform for sure. Who's next on your list, Piper?
I'm trying to decide if I should go with another team or if I should cheat again.
Ooh. Dude, maybe you should cheat. I'm intrigued by that.
Okay. Well, I have this is not really cheating. It's just off the beaten path. So I have one that's cheating, and I'll save that for my next pick. But my off the beaten path is John Daly's golf uniforms.
Oh, dude, I love it. I wish I'd thought of that so bad. Talk about it.
I question whether or not golf is a true sport because I feel like anything you can play in slacks probably isn't a real sport. That being said, it is absolutely a game of skill.
Yeah.
And John Daly is – the fact that there are no more John Daly's in the PGA makes me sad. It's a bunch of like Express for Men models now. Thank you, Tiger
Woods. Dude, a bunch
of
rich Express for Men, little robots that like – you know, lift weights too much. Yeah, it sucks now, man.
Whereas
totally
John
agree.
Daly was like, he was sort of the John Kruk of
golf.
You know, he was smoking on the fairways. He was wearing like plaid pants and shirts with like pineapples on them. And
he was a dirtbag in the best possible way.
He had like, it was like a mullet, but it was a bowl cut mullet.
Yeah.
So it was like straight bowl cut in the front, mullet in the back. So, I mean, it wasn't like business in the front, party in the back. It was like 9-year-old in the front, party in the back, while smoking a cigarette, while being 35 pounds overweight. You know, and at his peak, he was a spectacular golfer, but he also had the like, I'm going to hit 9 straight balls into the water kind of rounds.
Dude, right.
All while dressing in the most clashing, amazing concoctions of clothing.
Absolutely. Dude, he just seemed to like kind of thumb his nose at the whole like kind of country club ethos of the sport. You know, like this is what you guys want me to be. I'm just not going to be it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, he definitely seemed like somebody who, you know, he probably drove up in like a 1972 Dodge Charger with no muffler.
Absolutely.
Got out, you know, stuck his Coors Light in the cup holder, got out and rolled in, you know, ignored everybody, got all the turned up noses by the staff, you know, tipped people with slices of juicy fruit and, you know, just eschewed the whole thing.
Dude, amazing. So, Piper, you have once again thrown my war room into disarray. Daly was not on our board. But I feel like similar to what happens in the NFL when there's a run, there's like an early run on running backs. So like this year when the Lions, all those running backs started to go. So they panicked, they traded up for Kerryon Johnson, who totally would have been there later. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to trade up.
Oh, you're going to Al Davis this draft, are you?
I'm going to Al Davis this draft. And I am also taking a non-league, non-team sport athlete. I'm going with Mike Tyson's black trunks and cut towel as his ring attire. So Tyson, Iron Mike, he was the fighter of our childhoods. He was the namesake of Nintendo's, one of their first sports games, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Tyson wore plain black trunks into the ring. He wore sockless, like black high-top boxing shoes into the ring. And instead of a robe, he would just cut a slit in a towel and slide it over his shoulders. And he looked so bad. He just looked so, so dangerous when he walked into a ring. He would he usually walked into like Public Enemy back in that era. But it was a great look, man. It was a great look for a gladiator. He just looked lean. He looked spared down. It wasn't about the pomp and the circumstance like it is with a lot of these guys. And Tyson was just there to give you a beating. He was there to batter you, and his attire, his uniform, if you will, backed that up. He never had any ads on his trunks, never had any like embroiderment of any kind. It was just the black trunks, the black shoes. Great look. Piper, you are on the clock. What do you have?
All right, I'm going with my second cheater pick of the day.
Okay.
And we're going back to baseball again, and we're going to go with another baseball trend, and it is the sleeveless baseball jersey.
Ooh, now, Okay, this is fascinating because this is the first one that I take umbrage with. So I want to hear your defense, your elegant defense of the sleeveless baseball jersey, and then I'm going to push back a little bit. So have at it.
My elegant defense of the sleeveless baseball jersey is that baseball is a sport of tradition. It's okay. A sport of uniformity. It's yep. A sport of unwritten rules. Uh-huh. And the sleeveless jersey falls in none of those categories, and it looks absurd.
Yes.
It is patently ridiculous. Of all the things that we've mentioned, it's the worst looking by infinity.
Dude, it really is. It really, really is. You're
but
so right.
Just like certain jokes, if you make them enough times, they get funny. just by being absurd. This is like that joke. It's so bad that it's good. Okay. It's like there are people who love Crave Cases from White Castle.
Yeah.
Nobody actually loves Crave Cases. They love how bad they are, and so they enjoy the badness. That is the sleeveless jersey.
Mm. Dude, you know what? It's interesting, man. I thought you were going to very earnestly defend the sleeveless jersey, but actually your logic works perfectly for me because I was going to say all the same things except it looks classless, it looks tasteless, it looks unspeakably like late 90s, early 2000s, which was a horrible kind of era for fashion. It's just really, really bad. I can't remember it looking cool on any player.
Here's the thing, some of the teams who did it had spectacular uniforms to begin with, or at least really solid. Cincinnati Reds through the 70s and 80s with just their crisp red and white uniforms.
Dude, I loved the Reds.
Was just sharp. The Chicago White Sox have had some different – they've had some bad uniforms, but they've had some iterations of uniforms that you're like, how are you going to make black and white look bad? They're just pretty solid. I think the Padres may have at one point done a sleeveless uniform during the Steve Garvey era. And again, their brown and gold uniform was risky, but it was good. But the sleeveless, they ruin everything, but they ruin it in such a I'm just going for it. You know, it's like the Mohawk of uniforms. It doesn't really look good on anybody, but shoot, you went for it.
Piper, I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned the Padres. How do you feel about brown as a uniform color? Because I got to tell you, I'm in. I like Wyoming. I like the Padres. I love the Cleveland Browns uniform. Almost any brown-related uniform, I dig it. Where are you at with the color brown?
It really depends. I don't love the Cleveland Browns because the brown and orangey brown just isn't awesome. I love the I love a dark brown with the right accent color.
So the old brown Junie with the white pants.
Yes.
And just a little tiny pop of orange on the jersey and then the orange helmet. That was so dope. Classy.
That's much better.
The new one is a gong show though.
If you have brown in your uniform, you can't do a lot. It's earth tones, which means you can't flashy it up. So a little bit of gold, a little bit of white, like what the Padres did with their brown and gold, that worked. But it has to be done very simply or it begins to look like somebody threw up on the uniform.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, which is what the new Browns uniform looks like, sadly. Which is sad because they've got such a rich tradition. Pipe, who's on the clock? I've forgotten.
You are. Sleeveless jerseys was my pick. So
sleeveless jerseys was your pick. That's right. That's how we got here. Okay, I'm on the clock. I'm actually, I'm at that point, Piper, where my board is pretty. It's pretty stacked in terms of a lot of teams, a lot of uniforms, kind of in the same space. I'm gonna go with another great AstroTurf uniform. I'm gonna go a little bit. I'm going to stray from my core values uniform-wise. I'm usually a big accent color guy. I think there needs to often there needs to be a third color, just a little pop of a third color. But I'm going to go with one. It was just two simple colors, green and white. I'm going with the Tony Mandarich era Michigan State Spartans. And I hate Michigan State as a team.
Uh-huh.
But that uni with the Kelly Green helmet and jersey with a huge block S, the white pant with a huge chunky you know, single white or green stripe down the side, big numbers, just a basic shoulder stripe. It said Michigan State on the jersey. That was dope. Tony Mandarich wore that well. It was a great AstroTurf uniform. Mandarich era Michigan State Spartans.
I'm trying to think of a team with green and white colors who I have any feelings for.
Dude, I mean, right.
Not even like I don't like loathing or
right
or like, it's just it's the most boring.
I find that I have feelings for their uniforms. Like, okay, so another example. I really like the 80s Jets uniforms, like the Al Toon, Johnny Hector, Ken O'Brien, like that green and white chunky uni. They had big numbers. They had a real simple chunky shoulder stripe. Like, I just liked it. And maybe I liked it on AstroTurf in the era that it was in. But yeah, I didn't have any feelings for the teams, but I always appreciated the unis.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anything else to say about that one, Pipe, or are you ready to go back on the
clock? No, I mean, I like the pick. I tend to like two color uniforms, no accent yeah. colors, just two colors,
right.
especially in football uniforms, because football sure. uniforms go off the rails so fast.
They do. Yeah, they do. They really do. Yeah, a two color uni, it's hard to really screw it up. You know, it may not be memorable all the time, but it's, you know, you're not going to end up with a train wreck like the current Tampa Bay Bucks or.
But there's like in football, it's. So I remember as a little league baseball player, I played on a city league team. It was a park team, Elliott Park, and it was like a Cops for Kids program. So it was the first year they'd ever run it, and
yeah.
I was, you know, 8 or 9 years old, something like that. And we had like T-shirts and mesh back hats, and that was our uniform. Mm-hmm. And we nice. Would go play these teams that had like boosters, you know,
yeah.
so full. Polyester uniforms
stirrups.
With stirrups and the,
yeah.
the, you know, fitted hats and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And, I mean, we were a bad baseball team, but we were definitely going to lose when we went up against a team that looked like a real baseball team.
Absolutely.
In football, Absolutely. That is not the case.
Mm-hmm.
You don't look across the field and go, oh, their uniform looks so crisp. You look
yeah.
across the field and you go, it doesn't matter what they look like. I get to hit them.
Absolutely.
And so, like, football uniforms, like, keeping it simple works. It's kind of like the Mike Tyson thing. Like
yeah,
there's
sure.
There's something exceptionally just sort of we're gonna. This is elemental.
This is elemental because what we're doing is elemental.
Yeah,
like
this is a game of brute force.
That's right. I'm going to impose my will on
yeah,
you.
We're not interested in chrome on our uniforms. We're interested in destroying you. Period.
That's it. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Piper, that being said, you are back on the clock.
All right. I only have three names left on my board, and that's, I'm sure I'm forgetting many things, but I'm going to go off the grid a little bit here. Not off okay. the grid from an overall popularity perspective, but from a you and I perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to go with the Brazilian soccer jersey.
Whoa. Wow. Okay, man. This is I'm gonna you know, my war room is a buzz right now. So there's guys all over here like Google imaging what that even looks
so,
like. So talk me through that.
Let me lay out the strikes against me on this one. One,
okay.
I said soccer jersey. We don't.
You did, and you lost me there for
yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah, not really soccer fans. You and I.
Yeah.
Also, it's green and gold.
Okay.
Which is a color scheme that I almost inevitably hate.
You can't like it.
It's
you can't
just
like it.
Terrible.
Yeah.
However, it is a jersey that fits the team so well because they have always been, not always, for decades, a powerhouse team that plays in a visibly flashy style. They're known for high scoring. Their strikers are their most famous players, etc. And here's the reason I picked this one. Aside from just sort of like it's probably the most recognizable soccer uniform in the world, meaning it's the most recognizable amongst, you know, the most popular sport in the world.
Sure.
It has a cool backstory, which I heard on a podcast, which I now can't remember what it was. But so for decades, they wore a white uniform. That was their up into the 50s. They were a very good team, but struggled to get over the hump. And then I'm trying to remember all the details. Basically, they did a design contest. Like, they just put it out there and asked for submissions to the Brazilian people. And a guy who lived, you know, on the far reaches of the country, more, you know, on the inland side of Brazil, sent in his design. And it was selected. And the funniest thing is, I think he's an El Salvadorian soccer fan who just happens to live on the Brazilian side of the border. But he sent it in because he was like, well, why not? It's an interesting design. And nobody thought it would – he didn't think it would work because it was too gaudy. And so now this, like, canary yellow with the green stripes is their signature and has been since, I think, the 50s or 60s. And,
dude, interesting.
So I thought that story was cool. It's a signature jersey in a sport that I only pay attention to a little bit every 4 years. But nod to soccer and nod to a cool backstory for the most recognizable uniform.
Absolutely. No, I like it, Pipe. That's good. Let's call this our last round, then we'll go undrafted free agents. So we'll just do a little rapid fire undrafted free agents. My last round, and this is the jersey that I ordered from this week's sponsor, 503 Sports, 503-sports.com. This, to me, is my favorite, you know, obscure football league jersey. It's the 1980s USFL Los Angeles Express. And there's a couple elements of this, Pipe. One is, I think, maybe the most absolutely perfect color scheme ever. It's a dark, dark blue, so like a dark navy blue. Silver pants with a tiny little pop of red accent on the stripe and then on the outside of the numbers itself. Silver helmet with just a simple LA on the side with kind of a motiony symbol behind it. Really, really good looking uniform top to bottom. Steve Young wore this uniform. So Steve Young was famously signed away from the National Football League. The Express paid him a king's ransom to come to LA and kind of helm their franchise. So the other aspect of this that makes it unique is fit. So in the 1980s, there were two things about football uniforms that are different than now. One is that shoulder pads were big. So everybody had big shoulder pads. The other thing is that everybody had kind of big baggy jerseys, and the jerseys just hung in a different way. And I think in the baggy jersey era, this was the perfect jersey. It looked great. Sleeves on the arms mattered back in that era. Sleeves now are a non-thing. Every jersey now is just a sausage casing. You can't even see stripes or any kind of accents or numbers or anything on the sleeve. But this was a great era for stripes on sleeves. And the USFL LA Express is my last round pick for our uniform draft. Piper, throw some undrafted free agents at me. So now we're working the phones.
Wait, is
we're making our post-draft signings.
I think I still have one more pick, right?
Oh, you do? Yeah, because I started.
Because you started,
yeah,
right.
You got one more last round pick. Yeah,
all right,
for sure.
I'm going to go back to the NBA, and I think it's a bit of an unlikely pick, but I'm going to pick it because it was the first NBA uniform that I loved, and I loved the team.
Okay.
And it is the early 90s Phoenix Suns. So the Charles
–
so 93 is the year. So Charles Barkley, Kevin Johnson, Dan Marley, Danny Ainge on that team. And it was the purple with the sun – like the basketball was a sun sort of shooting it diagonally across the jersey. And I've expressed my disdain for purple as uniform color in general, but I will make a grand exception for that. And it fit that team so well because they were run and gun. They were explosive. They, as much as any team the Bulls played in the finals, they gave them all they could handle. I mean, they lost in six games, but still, there was a triple overtime game. There was some insane scoring performances. It was so fun, and the uniform just worked. And it was sort of a perfect contrast to the Bulls, you know, black and red, sinister uniform. You've got like this splash of like kids' finger painting over here that playing against it, and it was tons of fun.
And they had Tom Chambers, one of my other favorite 80s, 90s white guys. He was great.
He wasn't on that team, was he? He was a Sun earlier, correct?
He was a Phoenix Sun earlier.
Right.
Yeah, he was a 1980s Phoenix Sun, but he wore essentially the same uniform. So, good uniform, good team there, Piper. I'm glad you went with that era's NBA. I'm going to go with the Mark Price Cleveland Cavs uniform.
Are we talking the blue and orange one?
We're talking blue and orange. Yeah. So this would have been, yeah, like Larry Nance, Mark Price. Again, another fun team, another fun, like, almost decent Jordan era team. I mean, Jordan just dominated that whole era. But as far as the East is concerned, like, you know, the Cavs made a little, you know, they made a little noise there for a little while. But that was a good looking uniform. Just blue and orange. Very simple. Just the simple chunky Cavs with sort of the basketball going into the V on the front of the jersey. That was a good look. I think that's the last great Cavs uniform that we've seen. The ones now are just vomit. They're just a mess. It doesn't matter. And then they had the, like, DeJuan Wagner era. I think there were pinstripes involved when everybody had pinstripes. That was a bad uniform. They've had some real nasty ones. But
I feel teams change their color schemes, mm-hmm. they never get better.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Or maybe they do incrementally. So, like, the Timberwolves this last year changed from one shade of blue to another and one shade of green to another. And I think it's an improvement.
Yeah.
But they still think it's pretty lame and boring. And so, like, the Cavs, if they had just stuck with the blue and orange.
Yeah.
Instead, they're like this weird sort of wine and gold color thing now.
Yeah,
and they have black. Every NBA team has a black. Like, black uniforms, unless you are a team who that is one of your base colors.
It's stupid. They look ugly. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
Brooklyn
they
and San Antonio can get away with it. Every other
team Raiders can get away with it.
The Raiders can get away with it. The White Sox can get away with it.
Absolutely.
Nobody else should do that. It looks terrible.
I agree. So, Piper, I've signed a couple of undrafted free agents here, man. I'm gonna lay those on you.
All right.
Tyrone Wheatley era Michigan football. So this was back when Michigan played on AstroTurf. Again, baggy jerseys, big shoulder pads. This was kind of right near the end of that era. This would have been like, oh, gosh, Brian Greasy and before, quarterback-wise for Michigan. But AstroTurf in the Big House, real simple, the winged helmet. Yellow pants, basic blue jersey, yellow numbers, Tyrone Wheatley era Michigan football. Do you have a free agent pipe and undrafted?
I do, and I'm going to go way, way off the board with this one because this is what you do with undrafted free agents. You take a swing.
You're going for upside.
This is the basketball player turned football player. We'll see if he works out guy.
Yeah, I love it.
It is – hang with me here.
Yeah.
The professional cyclers helmet that some guys used to wear in the Tour de France that looked like – the head of the villain from Alien.
Gosh, I'm so jealous that you thought of that. I really, really hate you for that because that's so good, man. That's so, so good. I love it. It was the time trial helmet. So when they would time trial, they were going for maximum, like, aerodynamic, you know, stuff. And they would wear this, like, long kind of angular sweeping helmet. And you're right. It made them look like aliens. So, Piper, you've thrown my front office into disarray. So we have gotten on the phone. We've made a long distance call across the pond to France as well, and we are actually going to sign the 1970s cycling helmet, which was just like a leather hairnet. I don't know if you've seen this in pictures, but it's just like strips of padded leather. Classic look. It was back when cycling jerseys were wool, believe it or not. They were like short sleeve wool that would wick the sweat, the moisture away. 1970s Tour de France cycling helmet. That's an undrafted free agent for my ball club. Any other signings from you?
Yeah, I feel like I've made an allusion to this multiple times, just loving classic football uniforms, college football uniforms specifically.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go ahead and pick one, and it is the mid-90s Nebraska Cornhuskers football uniform. And here's why that's better. Like, I like Penn State's and Alabama's and Oklahoma's and Texas. All of those are solid. But Nebraska is bright red and bright white. It's bold. But
it is bold.
Super simple.
Yeah.
And I'm also a little bit jaded toward them because I had the chance to attend a University of Nebraska football game a couple years ago.
Nice.
It is an amazing home crowd.
Dude.
The stadium's filled with red. Everybody's into it. But it's not like, you know, some places if you go to the tailgating beforehand feels like you might get destroyed by a drunk man, like he's just going to fight right. you. There's just sort of a fun, lighthearted spirit to the whole thing there, where it feels much more communal. So yeah. That may have slanted my opinion that way. But yeah, that Tommy Frazier era.
Dude, Tommy Frazier, so good. And yeah, I think, so good.
Did Tommy Frazier wear a crop top jersey?
Yeah, that a lot of those Nebraska players in that era wore crop top jerseys.
Well, a lot of those dudes in the 90s, that Florida State was famous for it.
Famous. Derrick Brooks crop top was so fresh. Incredible.
Especially when I think Warwick Dunn wore the same thing, and he had the little he had like the little back armor flap that just swung free. So he's, you know, he's like 5'8 and 160 pounds running down the field away from somebody. He's got this little back flap going.
Yeah.
The crop top is a great uniform feature as well.
Dude, the crop top was an amazing look, and you're absolutely right. Nobody wore it better than Florida State and Nebraska back in that day, man. I'm gonna go with one more, and my uniform signing, very similar to yours, Pipe. Any Nebraska fullback from like 1980 to 1999. Huge neck roll, huge shoulder pads, crop top. We're talking like Corey Schlesinger, Jeff Makavica.
Yeah.
These guys were men. These guys were grown men who would like smash your helmet and break it and break your face mask. They defined
corn fed is what they defined.
They did.
You know, when people are like, oh, Midwestern corn fed, you know, country strong, like,
yeah,
it's
that's what
it's
they're talking
that
about.
Guy. Yeah, to
that's
a
exactly
T.
what they're talking about, to a T. Piper, we are nearing the end of our time because I have to go teach class. But you threw out another intriguing topic for this week, and that is, what's one sport you wish you could get into? And man, I feel like there's a ton I could say about this. And I will get to it, but I was wondering like what you had in mind when you broached that topic. One sport you wish you could get into.
Well, for me, it's especially international sports. So there are, you know, I see people's just diehard fandom of not just a team, like that's fine, but of a game. And the answer for this isn't soccer, because soccer fans are the most annoying fans in the world, especially.
Sure.
Okay, to be fair, American soccer fans, because they're all bandwagon jumpers who have arbitrarily pulled teams out of a hat from the EuroLeague. Like, good for
you. Dude, and they're so smug about liking soccer. You know what I mean? They feel like they're superior to you.
So this is more like sports that are culturally staples in other places, have huge followings.
Yeah.
And we pay zero attention to them in the States. That's what this is for me. I mean, I guess you could be like tennis or golf or whatever. I mean, I think it'd be cool to follow those a little bit more. But so that was what inspired the question for me. And I was having a hard time deciding between cricket and rugby.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's more rugby on TV now than there ever has been. So like now would be a good time to get into rugby. But dude, I have to tell you, for me, the answer could be almost any sport. And I think it's a function of maybe my age or my like emotional life right now. But I can't bring myself to care enough about anything because I have no personal stake in it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like I watch football religiously, but I think it's almost like muscle memory, you know?
Yep.
Because I really don't care at all what happens to any team or really even any player anymore. But I just watch out of muscle memory. I watch for like coaches that I like or schemes that I like or whatever. But almost every other sport, it's a series of like I have to talk myself into caring. And one that I wish I cared about, like I wish I had a team and experience, was baseball. Like I really want to enter into this long, languid, like summer tradition of like mowing the lawn and then coming in and flopping down on the sofa and flipping on a game and caring about it. But I just can't care about it.
So here's what you should do to try to get into baseball. So
baseball. Help me with this.
Listen to baseball.
Ooh.
Turn it on in the car.
Okay.
Or while you're mowing the lawn, if you have a decent pair of headphones, I realize lawnmowers are loud. Listening to baseball in the summer is like I listen to baseball while I walk my dog. You know, it's like it's 8 o'clock,
soothing.
The sun is going down, it's not super hot anymore, and it's perfect. because there's just like a cadence and a rhythm to it, and there's these long pauses where you hear the crowd in the background. And I mean, you have to understand baseball to do that because you're not seeing the game.
Sure.
But it's a great way to enjoy the game.
Dude, I like that, man. That's good advice. And I'm actually going to pose a bit of a challenge / question to our listenership. So a long, long time ago on my blog, I did this with college football because I grew up in Indiana. I played for a small college, so I didn't have strong rooting interests. So I actually opened up a national recruitment on my blog in which readers could send me swag. And then at the end of the recruiting period, I would sign with their team to be a fan of it for life. And that actually worked out swimmingly. So I signed with Syracuse. They have not had the best run college football wise, but oddly enough, they've been a super fun team to watch over the years because they've had interesting coaches and players come through there.
And they
play
in the weirdest stadium.
They play in a great weird stadium. They play in the Carrier Dome, which is super fun. I'm a huge Dome Stadium guy. So I'm gonna put this out there to our fans, to our listeners. Recruit me to your baseball team. So this could be verbal recruitment. It could be the sending of swag or gear. I need a team to root for. I need a team to care about. Help me care about your team. And recruitment is open as of right now. And let's say by, you know, two or three episodes down the road, Piper, I'm going to announce who I've signed with. I'm going to sign with a team. So
can I impose a couple rules on this, or is this
most definitely?
All right,
impose.
Yankees fans need not apply. Period.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. I'm
just
I'm with
stay
that.
Home. That.
Yep.
Cardinals fans also need not apply.
Yeah.
Simply because in our portion of the world where Ted and I live, mm-hmm. Everybody's a Cardinals fan, kind of, period.
By default, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with the Cardinals. They have a wonderful legacy as a franchise. They're not a bad mm-hmm. team to follow at all. They've had great successes. But they're not any fun to follow for all of those same reasons. So go ahead and keep your Jack Buck and you know, Wizard of Oz opinions to yourself, because you guys, both of you, can stay home.
Dude, no, I want a fun team. I want kind of an obscure team, a team with some upside, a team with cool swag. So I want a good hat to be able to buy, man. I want to be able to go to, like, you know, the hat store in the mall and buy a good hat after this thing is all said and done, after the dust is settled. So there it is. Recruit me to love your baseball team, and we will see where that goes. Piper, we have wandered to and fro throughout this episode.
Do we want to throw out a real quick book recommendation?
Let's do a quick book, man.
Since we always forget to do this now. We did it for like six episodes and then forgot.
Let's do it.
All right. I am going to throw out a quick one. This is the book that made me interested in both rugby and cricket, and it's called The Captain Class.
Wow, dude.
It's by a guy named, I think his name's Sam Miller.
Okay.
And it is a look at what is the key characteristic that sets apart the best of the best championship teams in history. So teams that were at the peak of their game for multiple years in a row. His conclusion is that it's the captain of the team. How he gets there is fascinating, whether or not you agree with him. But he talks about some New Zealand rugby teams and one or two cricket teams, sports that I am fascinated by. So it's called Captain Class. It's both a leadership book and a sports book, but it's really about sports, and you can glean some things about leadership, and that's the best sort. So check that one out, The Captain Class.
Dude, I love it. Also, what are the odds that, like, you and I could find our way onto, like, an adult rugby team together? I feel like that's hipster enough in Nashville that could be a thing.
It involves physical conflict, which is a thing that hipsters are not keen on. They might be more like, well, what about disc golf?
Oh, yeah, no.
Disc golf is not a sport.
That's not going to be a go with me, man. But if you could get me onto the rugby pitch.
That would be fun.
That'd be super fun. All right. So mine, because you mentioned Nebraska and you got me all nostalgic for all things like 80s and 90s Nebraska football, I'm going to go with a book called Big Red Confidential. This was written by Armin Katayan back when he was a sports writer and he wasn't primarily doing TV stuff. It's kind of a deep dive expose into, like, the Tom Osborne era Nebraska football dynasty and all the, like, sleaziness therein. So Tom Osborne was kind of a Tom Landry-esque, you know, moral values kind of figure. But beneath the surface of this program, there was a lot of shadiness going on. So Big Red Confidential, Armin Katayan, it's a good read. about the AstroTurf era Nebraska Cornhuskers. And with that, Piper, I think I'm going to sign us off because we have wandered to and fro, and I've got to go teach a class.
And I have a meeting to go to, which isn't nearly as interesting.
Dude, no, this has been the highlight of the day for sure. Thanks to the great guys at 503 Sports. Again, check them out at 503-sports.com for all your retro uniform needs. And until next time, Corey Schlesinger.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Is life feeling chaotic? I get it. I'm Rachel Wojo, host of the Untangling Life podcast. Don't miss the passionate encouragement and faith-based resources you need to help you clear your head and calm your heart. As Shell says, it feels like Rachel always knows what I need to hear. She keeps it real and is so humble. Her podcast is just the cherry on top. Enjoy Untangling Life with Rachel Wojo on lifeaudio.com or your favorite podcast app now.